Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's get on to our opening drive.
It's time for the opening drive.
All right, Dan, so we will get into the Justin Fields matter in the QB1 segment in more detail because I think that is the talk of the town. Certainly on the radio on Monday morning on our show, Mullion Haw Show, predictably there were a mixture of opinions and range of reactions. But I want to study the offensive line here for a moment because Cody Whitehair is the best player at the weakest position, and I don't know how to feel about what they did in replacing him in the short term. Matt Eberflus said out for a while. Typically that says not for the season, he said, but it'd be a couple weeks. Lucas Patrick is going to be the left guard. Sam Mustapha remains at center. You don't have to be an offensive line guru to identify Sam Mustapha as the weak link right now. Why are they doing what they're doing now?
Well, I guess the question would be, what would be the alternatives? To be honest with you, they don't have a lot of depth here. I think on a big picture level, the Bears were in a situation where they were never going to have the depth to withstand a lot of injuries. They certainly were not going to have the depth to withstand injuries to their key players. So when you lose a guy like Jalen Johnson for a couple of weeks, when you lose a guy like Cody Whitehair potentially for the rest of October and beyond, you've got to make some adjustments. I just don't know that there are a lot of simple, ready-made solutions here that make a lot of sense. So I'd be curious to hear what some of your suggestions would be that would be alternatives to this.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate, or at least for the point of discussion. If I'm sitting in that offensive line meeting room or the coaching staff, and it's Monday night and you're kind of, okay, guys, what now? I'm looking at my roster and I'm seeing a veteran with 10 years experience in Riley Reiff. I know that I struggle protecting the passer. I know that I have a guy that has barely played at all. I wonder why. I have to wonder, if you have a problem, why not come up with a creative solution? Now, I'm not suggesting that Riley Reiff, a career tackle, plays left guard, but I do wonder if you have some flexibility within your offensive line. If Lucas Patrick was signed to play center and he's playing left guard or right guard, what sense does that make? If Riley Reiff is going to be here to be a right tackle and you think Larry Borum might have a future inside, outside, it's a developmental type approach, why not try him at left guard, put it Riley Reiff at right tackle and solidify your center position? Look, while we're trying options, why not try anything and everything?
Well, to me, it feels like a lot of moving parts at a time where you're trying to make your starting quarterback as comfortable as he possibly can be. And you move a lot of parts around. Now you're experimenting with a lot of different things at once. And that doesn't necessarily cater to comfort for a starting quarterback who obviously doesn't have a lot now anyway. I know the counter argument would be, how could it get much worse? But I think it could get worse. I think it could get a lot worse. I think you could have some guys playing out of position, be very uncomfortable after training for the last several months for a specific role and then having to move somewhere where they haven't spent a lot of time. I remember talking to Kyle Long at length when they moved him right before the start of a season from guard to tackle, and how many headaches he had just trying to make that adjustment on the fly, and just how anxiety producing that can be for a young guy who's still trying to find his footing at something that he's good at, right? Much less move him into something that he's not comfortable with. So it's a lot of moving parts at a time where I don't think they can afford it. At the same time, this supporting cast here is everything we thought it was going to be, right? It's not providing a lot of support, both up front and in the receiving core, and the results are the results. I think when you zoom out and think about all the things that we talked about for months leading into the season, you see a lot of those things coming to fruition, albeit a little bit uglier in some circumstances than we expected it to be. But boy, it's a bit of a mess that may not be capable of being cleaned up in 2022.
everything you said is sensible. It's always been somewhat of a pet peeve of mine when I cover teams, whether it's the Bears or any other team in Chicago, but there seems to be this preoccupation with embracing continuity, and continuity is why you can't make changes. In this case, continuity is pretty mediocre or worse. You're not protecting the passer. Six sacks in 34 pass plays that were called from the sidelines. I don't know if there's much risk that outweighs the potential reward here, but I know what you're saying. You do have to err on the side of caution when you're talking about Justin Fields and his protection, because I think that you can't get too crazy. And what I suggested, maybe a conservative coaching staff would classify as a little bit crazy, and not something you want to do ideally during the season.
Well, also remember this, that the Bears signed Riley Reiff on the eve of training camp with plenty of urgency, right, to get him to try to come in and compete and win one of those starting tackle jobs, and he didn't do it, right? And so they saw things during the summer and during training camp and during some of the preseason game action that left them more comfortable with a fifth-round draft pick out of Southern Utah at left tackle and Larry Borum on the right side. And so you say, okay, Riley Reiff is not, some perennial all-pro moving in to shore up a position there. Look, they got to find answers, right? And it's a team effort to find answers. You look through that game video from Sunday afternoon. They used a lot of help, justifiably so, from their running back and their tight ends to help with the pass protection. And sometimes it still wasn't enough with some of the pressures that the Giants got home with. And so you got to find ways to get your quarterback to feel comfortable behind that offensive line. And until he does, it's going to lead to avoidable mistakes that stem from a lack of comfort.
We'll talk about some of those mistakes and the rapport he is establishing or not establishing with his receiving core in the QB1 segment, Dan. But let's go across the side of the ball to defense. Matt Eberflus spoke on Monday about the difficulty the Bears had, not only in stopping the run, but stopping Daniel Jones in the way that he hid the ball, his play fakes, and his ability to get to the edge and break contain. And Eberflus identified three different situations when that happened and three different defenses the Bears were in. And I thought that was interesting because it wasn't just one guy. They weren't picking on just one spot. They found him in three different situations, and they did the same thing, and the same mistake was made. So I look at the Bears' inability to stop the run, and they're giving up 183 yards per game, a historic pace. If this continues, they would be the third worst rushing defense in NFL history. Ooh. Dan, how do you address this in real time in the context of getting ready for a Vikings team full of weapons who will run the ball down your throat gladly, as well as the Giants did? How big of a crisis do you think this is for the Bears, and how are they viewing and addressing this?
Well, what bothered me most on Monday morning and Monday afternoon, and going back through some of the rewatch as well, is that the Bears knew there was only one way that the Giants could beat them Sunday. The Giants were so depleted in their receiving core. They hadn't done really a whole lot at all through the first month of the season in the passing attack. And so you said, hey, we've got to load up to try to stop Saquon Barkley, right? And they did. They loaded up and they tried and they didn't stop him. And then because of that, they over-pursued at times and they left Daniel Jones there to run wild in the first half, again, for 49 yards and two touchdowns before halftime. And you say, man, this was a golden opportunity to kind of have your way with a one-dimensional opponent, and you couldn't do it, right? And so that's troubling when you then fast forward, as you just did, to a game against the Vikings where you know you've got to account for Justin Jefferson. You know you've got to account for Dalvin Cook, if not Dalvin Cook, Alexander Mattison. And so you're going to be tested in a lot of different ways by a running game and a receiving core and a bright offensive-minded play caller that is going to put you in positions of stress. And if you couldn't stand up to the challenge Sunday in New Jersey, what are we to think that you're going to suddenly stand up at US Bank Stadium in Minneapolis this weekend?
Tell me if this is an overreaction. So I watch what happened on Sunday, and I see the Bears get gouged on the ground. Frankly, again, they've been four games this season, and I think it's been way too easy to move the ball on the ground. And I think to myself, while there will be clamoring for playmakers, clamoring for weapons, and the NFL draft and free agency will be where, every pundit will want the Bears to spend for the flashy wide receiver. I want to build and I want to rebuild the Bears. If I'm Ryan Poles, I want to start from the ball on out. I have seen, number one, lack of pass protection be a problem yesterday and all season long. stunt the growth of my franchise quarterback. And number two, the inability to stop the run and get off the field so my quarterback can do something without feeling like he's desperate and has to make a big play all the time. So I may look at the draft and free agency as the way they approached it from the get-go. Larry Ogunjobi was priority one for Ryan Poles, and I think that's a good priority to go into next offseason, even though we're only four games into this year. And that may change, but I doubt that priority list will shift for me.
Yeah, and you wonder what would have happened if they had just gone through with the initial deal for Larry Ogunjobi and how much he might have been able to help and what would have happened with that situation had he been able to join this defense. They're going to have so many needs going into the offseason of 2023. It's staggering right now. And I think this loss on Sunday, as someone who covers the team on a daily basis, kind of hit in the gut a little more than maybe I expected it to, because you look at the calendar and you say, God, it's October 3rd and the whole world is fast forwarding to the 2023 draft and the 2023 free agency bonanza, right? Like, this is what we knew was coming, but for whatever reason, you had that spike of energy in August. You had a undefeated preseason. You had the surprise win over the 49ers. You had the late heroics to beat the Texans, and you kind of stiff-armed reality for an extended period of time, and then reality came and punched you in the mouth on Sunday against a ordinary opponent with moderate talent that was obviously injury depleted and undermanned across the board, and you got beat, and you got beat pretty soundly because you couldn't do things that are basic to the game of football, like visit the end zone one time on offense and stop the run on defense. And so here we are, David, we're staring, you know, at three more months and 14 more games of having similar conversations, right? Of saying, oh, what are the biggest weaknesses? And look, like we always said that 2022 was going to be about identifying the building blocks, hopefully having a few young players emerge as guys you say that those are guys we can build around. Well, we need to see more of it, right? Like, and all the celebration of the draft class in August, you know, like we need to see more flashes from guys that are supposed to be here long term. It's worrisome that we might be in a rut for a little while here with this team and having to wait until those spring months of 2023 for answers.
And let's face it, in Chicago sports, October historically a heartbreaking month. So this is maybe just the beginning, although the schedule does agree with the Bears. They have a tough challenge against the Vikings, and then things soften up a little bit. I want to ask you two things about Matt Eberflus. The first being how he just reacted to the loss and some of the questions, and second guessing. I think that he is somebody that increasingly comes across as very comfortable, very confident, not cocky necessarily, believes in his plan and understands how immense the task is in front of him. And I felt like he answered questions the day after, you know, a loss that was a game they could have won without being real defensive. And I guess as transparent as he could be with everything except for injuries. And I understand that, but how would you describe Matt Eberflus a day after a loss?
Well, one of the things that the leadership at the top of House Hall really liked about Matt Eberflus is his steadiness, right? And that's been apparent here after the two losses that they've had to the Packers, and then obviously one that was a little bit more dispiriting, in my opinion, to the Giants on Sunday afternoon. And so Matt's steadiness is going to be something that they lean on, right, as a little bit of a buoy when the things get a little bit choppy. And we'll see where they go with it, right? It's one thing to be steady. It's another thing to be able to coach results into a team that they may not have the manpower to do all the things that you're asking them to do. And that's the fear here, right? Is that if you don't have the talent and you don't have the depth and you don't have the firepower to compete with even the middle tier teams in this league on a regular basis, it's going to make for some long Sundays, which then make for some long Mondays through Saturdays, right? And so that's going to be the huge challenge for Matt Eberflus is using that steadiness to get guys back recalibrated every week after tough losses to be able to lift them back up. I did think he was candid on Monday afternoon with his review of a lot of things that needed to be asked. And hopefully there'll be a few weeks where the questions are overwhelmingly positive on a Monday, right? As someone who's been on the beat for 10 years, I would love a few more of those just for a change of pace, right? On Mondays at Alice Hall. So let's see if they can make that happen.
I particularly enjoyed when it was brought up what happened on the Justin Fields fumble. A lot of people thought, like I was watching and maybe in the press box too, Dan, that thought initially looked like an incompletion. The arm was moving forward, and you have seen that called an incompletion in the past. I think sometimes it depends who the quarterback is and how likely you are to get that call or not. It was a fumble, and it was a fumble much to the surprise of some Bears offensive linemen who I don't want to say drew the ire, but certainly got the attention on tape when the Bears were reviewing it. And this is what Matt Eberflus had to say about that.
It's a little bit harder because, you know, and again, all those guys got loafs on that play, you know, just so we know that. But the linemen that were right there, and then, you know, the receiver that was there. So I think that, you know, that one's a little harder because it's coming from behind him. You know, typically when you have a fumble, if I'm a defender and I got, you know, we're punching the ball, we're all pursuing the ball, you can see that ball. It's like when we, like when Blackwell caused that fumble, you know, then Jalen was right there and it was squirting out, then he got it. Well, everybody can see it. You know, that's a little harder. It's like, hey, I'm pass pro and all of a sudden this thing drops out of the sky, you know, over my head, you know, and then it's there, you know. So I think Cody was caught off guard, you know, as all the linemen were, but we just had to be ready for it and jump on it and have some reaction there.
The butternut loaf of the day brought to you by the Take the North podcast, right? I mean, that there's, you know, an interesting balance in Matt Eberflus's assessment of that sequence there. I think obviously he's made it very clear to his offense, his offensive linemen, everybody in that room that that's not going to be condoned, that you have to be on that. At the same time, there was a little bit of sympathy there saying, look, it was an odd play. It was an odd sequence. I understand why you didn't act with the urgency you needed to, but you need to react with that urgency. Over time, David, as when they altered the rules so that, you know, turnovers and scoring plays were automatically reviewed, the officials were instructed to let plays like that go, right? If it's a loose ball and it's recovered for a fumble, they'll automatically send it up to the booth. And if it was actually an incomplete pass, you're going to get the ball back. And so players need to know that, right? You've got to hear a whistle. You've got to do what you do in practice and go after every single ball that's on the ground until you know that it's not live. And they didn't do that. And again, it was a turnover that took the Bears out of a scoring opportunity and then created a 75-yard touchdown drive the other way for the Giants that swung the game, right? And this is football in the NFL. And so Equanimeous St. Brown, a loaf. Cody Whitehair, a loaf. Tevin Jenkins, a loaf. Larry Borum, a loaf. A lot of loafs given out today.
I love that because the penalties, if you will, the punishment, as he described, the loaf, as if you're grading the film, have purpose. It's not just, hey, I'm in charge and this is the way to do things. It's you can learn from this. Next time it happens, you will be more aware that if the ball is on the ground, you go after it, regardless. Even if the whistle blows, you never know in today's NFL. So I think that was a good lesson, a humorous moment. And certainly we did not go the Bears' way in that case. But next time, maybe they learn from it. And you referenced on our post-game pod what happened when the Bears famously didn't. And it was the Chris Conte game and all that happened with the Packers. And we don't need to revisit that. But you can have bad results when you don't do what Matt Eberflus wants them to do.
Don't forget also, David, that in our pregame podcast before this game, we talked about the fumbles last week that the Bears didn't recover, three of them against the Texans, including one that was forced by the offense after a Justin Fields interception that Cole Kmet jarred loose and they weren't urgent enough on getting on that ball. So it was talked about last week. And then in a moment of truth, it didn't come to fruition for the Bears to get on a loose football the way they could have. And it cost them. And that's what's going to happen to a team like this. The errors you make are going to seem three times as costly as they might to a team like the Chiefs or the Buccaneers or any of the other Bills top tier teams in the league that can withstand that a little bit with some magic.